The Overview is a production of ChanManV TV. Find out more about the show at ChanManV.tv. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 61 of The Overview. I'm ChanManV, and got a full house today, packed, and we've got somebody returning to the show that hasn't been on in a while with Uber here, but I want to welcome Fishsticks, Flame, and Uber. How's everybody doing today?
Doing okay, Chris. I would be doing better if my last day of the season went a little bit better. I actually ended up getting completely destroyed. I was able to redeem myself just a tiny, tiny little bit. But the day before the season ended, I ended up going on a 3-11 streak.
Ouch.
That was actually the worst streak in my career so far. So good way to end the season. But you know what? Actually, next season starts in like a day, right?
So yeah. And you know, you take season highs anyway, so it's all good. Yeah. That's why they have that system. Flame, how about you, man?
My season went pretty good, I guess, all things considered. I had like a goal at the beginning of not playing that much because streaming it kind of sets me off the deep end every now and again. So I tried to minimize my games this season, but it paid off in the end. I think I kept cooler. I finished top 500 and I didn't have any days of negative win-loss throughout the entire season, which was pretty crazy, actually.
Wow, yeah. That's nice.
Like, man. My graph is just like a straight up like... just growth, you know?
That's a dream,
you know,
dude.
Flame, mine was like that, too. Mine was like that, too, until a few days ago.
Until the bottom
floor. Well, like, the thing is, though, I had, like, it mapped out in my head. Like, you know, like, I knew exactly what day I needed to play and what day I shouldn't play. And then the days that, like, what day I needed to play to minimize the amount of games that I would have had to play to keep in top 500. So, like, because once you got in top 500, it was smarter to park the bus than to keep playing. But then there was like a weird growth factor in the top 500 at the last day where it went from like 4,500 to 4,400 on one day. And then 3 days later, I think it jumped up to 4,450. So like it went up a lot in the week at the end. So there was a little bit of stress there.
I see. Ladder meta. You got to love it at the end of season. How about you, Uber? Any ladder playing this year?
To be fair, yeah, I mean, I set myself a goal this season. I just, like, each season I want to be into the next division. Eventually, that's not going to work out. But I was, like, high diamond last season. I managed to get into Master, and then I had to cast a bunch of CS, so I ended up decaying back down to 3K, and we start all over again next season. So it's just the way it goes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was trying to play different characters this season, which was pretty terrible for me. But at least I got better.
Just so I could play Tracer and get.
I was trying to play Tracer. That was exactly who I was trying to play, and I'm like so bad at her. But you know, you got to start somewhere if you're gonna play something different. And quick play just never. It's like it's never a great practice place or practice grounds for me because I feel like I do okay in quick play, and then I get into competitive with Tracer, and it's like god awful. So.
And so if you play Genji quick play, you're never going to get nano'd. So it's a good way to learn how to like get Dragon Blade kills without being nano. Like if you're playing in like a comp, you probably will get it. But usually there's like the duo queue. There's like an Ana and a DPS player and she just pockets them or Mercy or whatever. So match conditions are not even remotely close to simulating what you should expect in a relatively high SR range. So
Yeah. It's probably going to take a few seasons before I can actually play it reasonably well. But yeah, so season 5, like Ben said, starts tomorrow. Which is really great. I'm so happy that they had this short turnaround because never really understood why they had the 2 weeks, you know, before. Maybe they were lining up like releases with it in the past, but this is the best, definitely the best setup for players out there. So, you know, folks that are excited about trying to get some more points to get some golden guns, well, it's going to be starting up really, really quickly. One thing I was doing... trying to do with my son and, you know, obviously with all the loot boxes available in the arcade, let's play some 3v3 and 1v1s. Wanted to see if you guys have gotten a chance to play around with the new formats and check it out.
Yes, but Jason actually tricked me into doing this because he said, oh, let's play a couple of games, right? I'm like, yeah, okay. No worries. I need to level up my ult anyway. And he's put us into like this 3v3, like the new mode with the new maps, which are pretty cool, quite kind of compact, and there's nothing, you know, over the top crazy about them, but they feel kind of balanced. But we played the 3v3 sort of elimination mode where you couldn't use heroes that you previously won a round on. And I actually thought it was pretty sick. I actually think there might be something there, to be honest.
Yeah, I do too. Flame, Fishsticks, you guys play at all or no?
I just wanted to get the competitive games in. I'm not going to lie.
Why do I even bother asking
Ben? I'm always
Ben?
Like this. I'm such a disappointment. I just like stick to comp only.
It's all good. It's all good. Flame, you get a chance to try it?
I played the 1v1 mode's really cool. The one where it just gives both players like three heroes and you have to pick which one. There's like a meta game if you get the right draw. Mm-hmm. But Roadhog still exists in it, so it's a little... like if you see Roadhog, you just kind of know that you have to pick Roadhog. So I think that's something that's that right. might need to change or something. But 3v3 is okay. It's just 3v3 is weird if you solo queue it because there's also like another factor of whether or not someone's going to pick a healer. Mm-hmm. And then
you have to have a healer though.
Yeah, that's if you have a healer, you just
have to have.
So if you like, if you play like some round, let's say you play just 3 DPS because you can. And then you win that round. Well, guess what? You can't use any of those in the next one. So you can completely just slaughter your pool if people just pick random stuff. So, but I think actually, like we talk, this like is it. Just pretty short, mm-hmm. but we talk about having like how there was an idea of having bans in picking in Overwatch, and it's not something that Blizzard kind of wanted. This simulates that to a degree if you have multiple rounds and there's some heroes that you just can't play on the virtue of that you've already won with them. So there actually might be more of a meta game there, you know, for those that are actually brave enough to try and find out what that looks like.
Yeah, I play both, and I think that the 1v1 still needs some work. Like, there's something to do with just the duration of the games that really, really bother me. Like, because I kind of like the way that how they set it up, though. There's more strategy involved where you pick the character you want, even though Roadhog's, like, available every other game. So it wasn't that, like, different in a lot of ways. But I do like the fact that you get to choose characters. But, again, it's just so short. You know, it's like you die, and then all of a sudden it's just... next round, you know, and something like that might work. I mean, it does kind of work for things like CSGO, but not 1v1, you know what I mean? 1v1, I almost feel like they need to have it, like, you be able to respawn and then just kind of have that duration be, you know, a few minutes or something like that, 1v1 with those characters. It might feel a bit a lot better. 3v3, though, feels actually really good right now, and that's why I think that they actually might have something there, and it really hit me once Mercies started to rez, and it was just like, holy crap, I've had like a couple epic games, you know, where both teams are rezzing and you know, you have these long fights and you know, just something that's a little bit more analogous to the game, to the 6v6. So Jeff
it
talked about
it. It would be fun to see that thrown into the mix for a tournament as like a side event. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Whoever does that first is going to... I think there's going to be a lot of hype going into that.
I mean, like the HTC 2v2s for CSGO is kind of fun. I mean, it also is kind of really oversimplified. And like when I watched like a full day of broadcast and it's like the guys in the desk were like, please murder me now because there is not much more to talk about than people just killing each other. But that's a fun thing and people watch it. And it's a great way to settle grudges. If you watched DeFran's drunk stream the other night, you would have seen the same thing. Like it's just really fun to watch, especially him versus Too Easy was like the highlight.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh.
That was the beginning of Too Easy's downward spiral into Masters, though. So I'm not sure how much they enjoyed that.
Yeah,
I think Too Easy was competing in the Agents 1v1 tournament, and I think we pulled him into Flame's Discord afterwards and interviewed him, and he was so tilted, man. I'll tell you what. He's good for a laugh, that one. He's good-natured about it as well. You know, he's very intense.
Yeah, so anyways, everybody, go give that a try. Yeah, you get loot boxes. You can get a win, you know, in each of those modes. And the new maps are cool too. They're much more open right from the get-go. It's like you come through the doors and you're almost, you know, you can almost see each other on some of the maps. So a lot different than the Arctic map or the Antarctica map. But try it out and yeah, let us know actually how if you guys are having a good time with it.
Before we move on from our season 4 experiences, I'm actually curious to get your guys get some info on what kind of heroes you guys picked. This season, I really wanted, my goal was to try and get around and play a whole bunch of different stuff. And I started the season that way, playing basically everything. But by the end, I suddenly realized that I had 18 hours on Winston, and my next highest hero was like 9 hours. So I basically became a Winston main this season. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's just like so good in every situation right now. Did you guys like try to stick to a specific subset of heroes, or just play whatever the hell your team needs, or what was your philosophy for that?
For someone who could be pretty outspoken, I'm actually super non-confrontational when it comes to rank because I'm so precious about my rating because I don't have that much time to play, right? So quite often I just end up playing Ana just to avoid any issues, or Zarya for that matter. Probably Ana, Zarya, and Winston are my most played right now. I think Winston's too good, especially when you can, you know, link up with all the Genji mains of the world and actually get some dive going on, which is still hard for some people to deal with, especially at like 3,500.
So. Yeah. Flame, you? Flame?
I mean, I kind of try to take over the pub when I'm on the team. Just like, all right, guys, this is what we're doing. And like that works for me, but I think it's more map specific. Like King's Row, I think if I wanted to win, I just pick Zarya every single time. Ana on Koth generally is pretty safe. And then I just have like a system in my head of like, okay, if I want to win this map, this is what I need to do, and this is what I'm going to play. And I think it like worked out more. I think most of my wins were on Ana. I think one night at the beginning of the season, I went on like a 13 game Ana win streak or something. But after that, it was mostly like whatever I needed, Tracer 76. But I think per map, it made more sense to me than having like some hero that I was going to stick with throughout every game.
One thing that I'm really conflicted about is I just kept winning whenever I picked Symmetra. Obviously, only in very specific situations, like Eichenvall defense, maybe Dorado defense if I'm feeling spicy, sometimes Hollywood, a couple other maps. But by the end of the season, I think I was 15-4 with Symmetra, which feels awkward because I don't even play her very much. It doesn't make any sense, but I don't know.
Well, so like Symmetra is one of those heroes where if you know how to deal with it, or if a team knows how to deal with it, they'll deal with it. But depending on how high the rank is, they're not always the best at dealing with it. So like if you do get a shield gen or a teleporter up and they don't have the right hero to go kill it, or the right player that's intelligent enough to go kill it, then it just kind of wins you games by itself. It still works in GM, I mean.
Yeah, like at the top, this like is in GM where this is working.
So like it's, yeah, I mean, even at top 500, you can win games with the Symmetra if your teammates play around it. It's, I mean, it is what it is. Yeah. It feels scummy, but it works.
It feels really scummy, yeah.
It works.
It's fun. I like it.
Good, Chris. I can't hear you, buddy.
you're muted, Chris.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, sorry. I had a sign.
You're still muted.
Well, I'm muted for you guys. I'm muted for you guys. Okay.
I'm just going to take over the show now.
Exactly. That's why you're the other host. You're back. You're back. Yeah, yeah. That's cool. So Winston for you, and I played a little bit of Winston too. I think Winston's like a lot of fun to play, and definitely a lot harder than I think people give him credit for too. Especially landing on people, I think there's definitely a great skill about just like jumping super high. I've always wondered like why Miro jumps so freaking high and lands on people and things like that, but now I'm definitely having a better understanding of it.
One of the highlights of my season, Chris, is I was playing on my alt with my girlfriend and she got hooked on Hanamura. I jumped, I threw my Winston barrier down and it landed in the like the 5 pixels between her and a hog.
Oh my god,
it felt so good.
Awesome. Oh. Rescue, yeah. Man. That's like definitely great. Oh, you know, one thing I did forget to mention, guys, in the 1v1, I totally forgot to mention this, is that I ended up trying to get that loot box, right? Just the 1v1. I ended up losing like 8 times in a row. And I finally just succumbed as like, and my son ended up playing with me and he like gets it first try. So I'm like, oh man, it's already happening, man. It's already happening where my son's already getting better than me. So,
extreme, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Getting old. Some new details came out recently, or at least last night, in terms of the possibly next hero. Because, you know, when this piece of lore just comes out of nowhere late at night, it's like, okay. And the post here, which let me bring it up real quick, is all about the lunar space colony, right? Where, you know, obviously Winston came from, or the Horizon Lunar Colony, sorry. A lot of you know, messages, emails, I guess you could say, were exchanged here. And it definitely hints at another specimen, you know, that was in the lab being potentially the next, you know, character, next hero in the game. So I wanted to see what your speculations are as to what this all means, given that Jace or Jeff, he actually said that there's a new hero on the horizon too recently. So a lot of things matching up here. What do you guys think?
I think it's a new map.
You think it's a new map? Oh, okay. So
I think that I think there's going to be a new character here too, simply because they were specifically talking in this update last night about some of the other monkeys in the or other apes or whatever.
Yep.
On the space station. But when we first saw that Winston cinematic with the space station, however many months ago, the first thing in everyone's mind is like, oh my God, there has to be a moon level. So I'm crossing my fingers for that.
It could be
really, really cool. Like visually, you know, that's going to be absolutely gorgeous. I wonder, like, who knows? Maybe it'll be half gravity or something absolutely crazy like that. Anything's possible, but I'm crossing my fingers more so for a map than a new character.
Wow. So you think it's the space station or an actual moon map?
I think it's, a space station or something on the moon. Yeah, mm-hmm. either or would be epic.
I didn't think about that. Flame, what do you think, man?
Maybe it's the return of Jetpack Cat.
Yes. That's what I was thinking, because the problem is in some of the messages it says like we got to confine all the gorillas to the quarters. I'm like, are gorillas the only things that? Okay, first of all, I don't get too excited about like theory crafting this stuff. I only really care until I see that, you know, the skill set over here and how it impacts things. But that marsupial dude or whatever it was, Jetpack Cat or whatever, looked kind of cool. Had like two swords or something like that. So maybe you know, Genji meets Winston because he's called
I mean, I want a hero. I want a hero that has some air control that can just like jump in the air and kill Mercies. That is the dream.
I mean, Miro does
like a
Mercy
slaying melee jumping character, like a hero that is Genji with Dragon Blade that just runs at Mercy.
I mean, they had
slaughters them off of the ladder.
I mean, it's
had a lot of issues like tuning for a pure melee hero. That's what they wanted Genji to be. They gave him Shuriken.
Well, melee is messy, or melee in general is messy when it comes to online games. Mm-hmm. Like there's like hit rig concepts that are broken.
I tried out Battleborn at the 2K Studios in Munich actually before it came out, just to see what it was like. And there was this guy with two swords, right? And they'd done so many balance runs over this game, and he was broken. And they're like, we don't know how to fix this guy. He's just broken. So I can see it must be really hard to balance that kind of thing. But if something pure melee, if they get it right, would be sick.
Yeah. Okay. So you guys think it's Jetpack Cat or whatever that thing was. Very well.
Wait, I'm sorry. Hold on. What am I missing here? What is this Jetpack
Somebody
cat?
Drew. It was a concept art or something like that. Where
I feel like I totally missed this.
Yeah, it was early on too. It was like
Jeff brought it up in some interview. I don't know what event it was for, but Jeff leaked it, and then there was apparently a lot of the devs were very passionate, or at least the esports scene was passionate about Jetpack Cat, and it was like a concept. But I think we do need more air control heroes in terms of just like anti-air.
Yeah, well, I mean, anti-air is pretty. I feel like it's pretty handled right now, right? Just with the hit scan. You think it still needs more?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, it almost unlocks like a slightly different dimension to the game. Because although the Pharah can obviously move in the, you know, in a sideward direction when she's in meta, she can't do it very easily. So maybe someone that's constrained a little bit lower to the ground but actually has like a bit more air control. And also, like, you know, we're moving away from overly anthropomorphic characters apparently with Orisa coming out. So I mean, why not? You know, it's 2017, gentlemen. Why not
get a bird
by the roster a little bit?
A bird?
Like with swords. I don't know what they're called in Zelda, but there's like that race.
Zoras. Okay. They're like fish.
No, the Zoras are fish. There's the birds.
Rito.
Yeah, the Ritos.
Oh, I haven't played the new game. So.
What are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for? Okay, so we've got new map or new hero, and all those things are exciting. I definitely want to see some new stuff. And that's the summer, right? I think the timing of it should be this summer, given that Orisa was February, right? Or is it March, right?
I think at the end of the day, so I don't want to be that guy, but think of how long the Sombra arc took. We're like on that time frame right now.
No. We're not doing Sombra. Like,
you get a hero announced in June, and then we get to see it at BlizzCon in November.
No.
See you guys there.
No. I'm telling you, if this isn't this is clearly not Doomfist, right? Doomfist is going to be BlizzCon, all right, guys?
The thing that Blizzard does as well is that they tease different heroes at different times. There's not really necessarily any rhyme or reason to when they give you information about a new hero. And that's why when Orisa came out, everyone was like, Doomfist is definitely coming out. I mean, this has got to be a thing. The Doomfist is missing. We still don't know what that actually is about. So they kind of snuck Orisa in amongst our suspicions of Doomfist. And, you know, it would have blindsided a lot of people when the first material started
coming
out.
Well, the gauntlet is still stolen. So how long are they going to let it be stolen? That's really the question I have. Like,
okay, that's ARG stuff.
From a lore perspective, I don't know how you can keep the game going if the Numbani cart just doesn't have an escort to bring around. Like,
what's the point of escorting the damn thing? It's broken anyway.
I know, exactly. Why? What is the point of Numbani right now if there's no
Doomfist? It's a relic, man. Cart? It's like, you know, just having
the whole
close.
Thing Overwatch was against.
If we took the guy out of the Hollywood car, would we still even play Hollywood?
Well, so the nice thing about Orisa was that we saw the whole, you know, the Numbani airport thing, right? And Orisa came out shortly after. It was like on PTR that week or like very, very soon, right? So maybe we actually get something on PTR this week. That'd be pretty awesome.
I think it's good if it...
Don't rile up the natives too much now, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, in my eyes, though, I think...
It's Tuesday. It could drop any moment.
That's right.
It is Tuesday. That's we right. could be due in a couple hours, but I think realistically it probably makes sense to do it earlier in the season if you want people to play PTR, because competitive, usually the first week is a little...
crazy.
Know, messy.
Definitely.
So giving people a reason to play PTR might be good. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, with certain esports events on the horizon, it may be upending some aspects of the competitive side of the game. Not saying it would happen, but maybe that's less than ideal.
Yeah.
True. Or it's more than ideal. I had this conversation with...
If you like, Kyle.
I had this discussion yesterday with Bromas of ex Dignitas fame about World Cup, because I asked him, like, oh, how's your group or whatever? And he's like, oh, we have to beat France. And I was like, oh... And then he's like, I was like, well, maybe. I was like, maybe they'll add a new hero that just completely destroys Rogue's comp. And then what? And then maybe it'll even out the playing field for the countries that are sending full teams. Because now
everyone invent Miro?
Hmm?
Already invent Miro?
They already invent Miro?
Miro already exists.
Ouch.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we can get Miro on the Spanish Overwatch World Cup roster, but...
Miro sounds a little Spanish to me.
It does, actually. Yeah, it is a Spanish word.
All right, well, let's get into some team news, and then we'll get into a lot of the events. There's a lot of events to talk about. So team news-wise, we had maybe a couple things. So first thing was FaZe Clan seems to have a little bit of a new look, a couple new players. Wanted to see if you guys had any comments about it. We've got Louis, you know, obviously fresh from... trying out for the Envious, and clearly, you know, I think Envious has found their guy, given that Effect is officially part of Envious now. And then we got Joe Meister too, right? So what do you guys think about this new FaZe Clan?
I was always a big Zoms fan back in the day. Mm-hmm. I think Zoms is an incredibly talented player, so he's one of the guys that's no longer on this roster. I'm not sure what's going on behind the scenes, where he's headed next. But it to me, it was surprising to see him drop, because I don't think he was anything to do with their kind of less than great performance as of late. But you never know what's going on behind the scenes. They've got Spree now, obviously. Spree coming over from the LG Foil team, and also plays that Zarya role pretty damn well. So it's not like they're losing out. They're still going to have a very talented Zarya in that role. But yeah, I'm wondering where Zoms is going next. But yeah, obviously, if you have such an extended period of not being successful, it's probably time to shake something up. So good to see.
All right. Uber, any comments on this?
Honestly, I kind of like that they kept the core of this team, sort of, you know, to a degree. I think Rock is, in fact, fiction. really, really very individually strong players. I think Spree is insanely dedicated as well. That guy grinds. And we think about what Zoms' role was in this team as well. We saw him play that Zarya. We saw him play that 76. Mm-hmm. You've got Spree, who I think is an insanely good Zarya, and I think a 76 role is pretty easy to cover in this team. I think that the Louis being on that DPS role as well also means that, in my opinion, you might have a potentially stronger Tracer option in this lineup to work with Shadowburn if he's going to play Genji. The biggest issue I had with FaZe was watching Shadowburn play D.Va, so they have Spree now to flex in that role. I really want to see him be enabled. For me, he's a player like Lynxer as well, who's a player for so long, wasn't allowed to do his thing. And then we saw him quite recently play for Yikes. He was just wrecking people. Like, he was a better Tracer than, I think, Sinatra in some situations when he was playing. Or they were playing up against, you know, some pretty tough opponents, and he was just dominating. So I'd like to see specialists play their roles because it's the best indication, I guess, of, you know, a person's ability in that role. So I like this. I think having Spree in this team is sick. It takes a lot of that pressure off Shadowburn as well now that he can really focus.
Mm-hmm. Flame?
I think there's some weird overlap in their hero pools, and I feel like there's still some gaps, I guess, when I look at their roster now on paper, because Spree had a very deep hero pool, I think, before he went to LG, but then LG kind of, like, limited him to playing Zarya, I think, like, 90% of the time. So I'm not really sure where he stands on, like, the rankings of the rest of the heroes that he used to play, like the Pharah, like the Tracers, and the, I guess, D.Va or Reapers of the world. But so that's interesting to me. And Louis, too. Louis, I don't remember him ever having, like, that Zom's Widow pick or being, like, a super strong D.Va or Winston flex. So that's also, I wonder what comps they want to run or what their game plan is, I guess, from that perspective. But Joe Meister makes sense. I think I talked to Joe Meister as soon as Cole broke up, and I was like, oh, what are you doing? He was like, I have some options. So I guess he wanted to come here. But I think a lot of FaZe's downfall, too, just had to do with the fact that a lot of their players never came to NA, and they never got the team house that they were talking about for, like, an entire year.
I think Shadowbed's been moving for how long now?
Yeah, exactly. So, like,
oh, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, that's actually a thing. So them losing NA tournaments with half their players overseas is weird. I think getting rid of Forsaken for Joe Meister makes a little bit more sense because Rockus never liked playing Lucio. Mm-hmm. I think he never wanted to play Lucio, and I think that picking up a Lucio main is probably in his best interest. I don't know what Forsaken's doing, though, obviously, after this, but I mean, you have to shake things up, I think, when things aren't going right. And I think keeping too many players on a roster that's not working never really works out for a lot of teams.
Yeah.
Because there's obviously, like, synergy or just mentality issues or blame issues. So I think bringing in, like, three new players is a really good idea for them. And I mean, it's a new roster, you know, so you can't really have a lot of expectations, but you can definitely have a lot of room for growth.
Yeah. When can we get this team together, like, and just start playing some, you know, lands? Because they seem to perform so well whenever they're able to do that. And
hopefully before Contenders.
I mean, I'm assuming they'll try to come to NA by the end of, like, by today. But
maybe they have any visa issues or is anything like that? Or
Shadowburn's from Russia, so
I would say that, despite being, firstly, there's a few, like, things that need to be met to actually get a P1 visa, and it's quite difficult, I think, in terms of legislation. Secondly, as well, I mean, getting visas in the US has become a little bit more of a complex process lately. I have firsthand experience of just looking into this as, you know, as an option. Maybe one day I want to live in the US and try and go for it. And it's like, it's a lot harder now. It takes a lot longer, almost double the time. So, and if they don't give it to you, you just don't get it straight up. If you request or you have, like, a lawyer request on your behalf and they just say no, then that's it. You can't ever get one.
Aren't you, like, done for, like, 2 years or something? You can only do it once every, I don't know. I might be.
Yeah, well, I think there
if
is
you
like
screw
a,
something up,
yeah,
then
it hurts.
You get totally, totally fucked. And then you can never come in for, like, years or something.
I know it's bad. That's why you get lawyers to petition the government on your behalf, and you need to pick the right visa type, and you need everything. And now check your social media, bro. They'll check all that, especially nowadays.
They'll check your tweets about kangaroos.
Oh, man. Don't be watching your Twitter, man. Got to be careful with that now. Wow. I didn't actually realize that, but it makes total sense that they'd be checking that. Okay, so FaZe Clan, the next team that we have is Evil Geniuses. And the reason why there's all this team talk, by the way, guys, is because, you know, on the Contenders, Overwatch Contenders page, you know, the teams are listed, right? So every time, you know, just new changes occur on these pages, then people, you know, to notice very, very quickly, and then discussion starts up. So with Evil Geniuses, they have 8 players on the roster. I'm not sure if this is going to continue. Maybe they're still trying to figure out, you know, a six. But right now, I think they have, Milo, I think Graceful or two that kind of stand out that just recently got added to this roster. So what do you guys think of the Evil Geniuses? Given, you know, it's obviously a big esports brand that we've known for a long time. And getting into Overwatch with, you know, this team, any potential for some big splashes?
I mean, they've already been on the up and up.
Yeah.
And we're still waiting to learn exactly what's going on here. Currently on the Overwatch Contenders page, it says DCOP and Goliath are substitutes. So I guess they've been pushed to the bench, I guess is the right way to frame it. But, you know, everyone knows Graceful just from watching his stream and watching him on everyone else's stream and the fact that he's right. held such high ranks in comp for so long. But I'm interested to see Milo coming back because we haven't heard really a peep from him in the last, like, what, 2 months or so? He hasn't really been on any teams recently. So it's always good to see people who've been in the free agency pool resurfacing themselves. But, you know, we're not going to really know what this means until we see them play and see what their actual roster is. My guess is, like, they're adding these people so that they can have the flexibility. The fact that these other guys are still on the team, I think, means that we probably won't know what their final six is until they actually play, right?
Right. One thing's for sure, Graceful needs a new player icon. This is stands out like a sore thumb. But Flame, what do you think about this roster?
So I don't know if this is confirmed or if this is true, but the way I understood it with DCOP was that he's from Mexico.
Mexican.
So he's not eligible technically for Contenders because you have to be like USA or Canada.
Oh.
And the South Americans are actually, I mean, not that Mexico is from South America or Mexico is in South America, but as far as I'm concerned, I think Latin American countries or Mexico and like the rest of South America or just South America in general are not allowed to compete in NA Contenders currently. Oh, right. And they need like some form of, I think they need like a visa or some like proof of residency or something. And I don't think DCOP has a P1 visa to go with his EG title. So that makes sense for him to not be able to play for Contenders. So them going to Milo makes sense in that regard. Mm-hmm. Is it permanent? I have no idea. I haven't really looked into this. I think Goliath is a shocker because a few of the players on this team in particular do reach out to me actually asking for help or just like analysis stuff on their scrims because I don't think they have a coach or an analyst right now. And so like I know a lot of them are really hungry for information and improvement, and Goliath's definitely one of them. So it's weird to me that they would pick up a Graceful to play support over one of what I thought was one of NA's like better up and coming support talents. So that's weird to me, but on the topic of Milo, I think it might have to do with just the fact that it is Contenders and maybe there's some scheduling conflicts and maybe Goliath's not even available or something.
Yeah.
But that's how I see it.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, generally speaking, like it's a real shame about DCOP because it's super hard to find like top tanks in North America. Yeah. Like this has been a topic that has been discussed at length by a lot of people. I mean, Pure, I think, he was saying it last time. It's super hard to find him, but it's just kind of ironic that another sick tank in a North American team is actually being held back for that exact reason. I mean, Milo, we just straight up haven't heard from him, haven't seen Omar since that energy roster. I think he's actually one of the better tanks. I think people used to, you know, almost pull him in Mezra on a similar sort of footing, but I just straight up haven't seen him in a while. Graceful, I mean, he's a grinder. That's fine. But I actually think this team was doing really well. I was quite surprised, actually. They should have been in the monthly melee finals because they beat Envision in the upper bracket, then dropped down and then ended up losing to them and everything sort of just hit the fan there. So this team kind of, to me, is almost like a CLG where, you know, we're very disparaging of these rosters yet formed under big names. We don't really know the players. And sometimes there's publicity that's maybe not, you know, matching the status of the team. But they grind really hard and they have resources, presumably. But you're right. I think Meep still listed as the coach for this team. I don't know if they have, like, fully staffed out there as well. So
yeah. They
might just be plugging gaps here. We can only do speculate.
Okay. All right, so that's the last of the... Any other news that you guys hear about recently? Maybe in the last hour? Seems the player news and team news seems to be like a fluid thing. It seems to happen like every single minute of the day.
Double Sword Chipmunk has been released, guys. So get excited.
Double Sword Chipmunk? Wait, are you serious?
No. Yeah, absolutely. Just check it, man.
Just check it.
What was the other thing? Fnatic going their separate ways? It kind of is a surprise to me, but I don't know if it's all of them.
Custer announced that today.
That's big news because I mean, they were no longer with Fnatic as of a little while ago, but Flame, are you saying that the core of this roster is actually not sticking together?
That's the question. I don't know. Custer made the tweet, but I don't know if that's just him, if that speaks for all five of the rest of the players are splitting up, because I mean, I know that there's like a core of that team that's been playing games together since the beginning of time. So I'm not sure what their plans are. I just know Custa is now looking for options. I mean, CLG obviously had problems, but CLG actually did well at the OMM this weekend, I think. They almost beat C9 to kick them out of groups, which was pretty insane.
I have to wonder what Custa's situation in terms of his residency is like, because as an Australian guy, we have a nice country, but our passport ain't worth shit. Quite a lot of the time, not even in the UK, mate. We got the same queen on their passport. It still doesn't matter. So
really,
do you think Contenders is like? I mean, this might be a coincidence, but maybe it's not. Maybe he can't get into USA for Contenders and can't play with the rest of the squad because they're already here.
I don't know how P1 visas work in terms of like how long they last. For example, I've got a working visa here in Germany and it allows me to be a resident while I'm working. But after I leave, if I was to leave my company, I'd have like a month to leave the country. So I don't know how contingent his visa is on him being registered on that team or him being on their payroll or being employed by them. And as an Aussie, this is really hard because it's very, very hard just to, you know, pull a visa out of your rear end. It's probably easiest actually to get a P1 like that. There are visas that exist for Australians in the US, but you need to be employed and you need to have like academic qualifications that somewhat correlate. So, I mean, I hope for him that he doesn't sort of have to go back to Australia, because while there is a decent scene, he's a fantastic Zenyatta player especially, and I think he's very vocal, he's very communicative. I think this is a good time for Zen players, and I really hope he gets picked up, because I never heard a bad word about him from any of his teammates. Mm. So,
and really, this is just, I'm just kind of bummed in general. This Fnatic squad has potential, and we've all been wanting to see Tailspin play again. The rumors were swirling, not even rumors, Tailspin was playing with this team again, which was like the super old Hubris guys getting back together. So I'm just super bummed. I want to see Cool Matt play. I want to see Tailspin play. I want to see Stoop again. I want to see Custa. I want to see this whole team in action. So now I'm wondering, are they going to reform? Are they going to merge with other teams before Contenders? I mean, you only have a couple days really to get this all figured out. Hopefully we see them land on good rosters though, because all those guys are talented.
I heard that Custa might have gone to Canada, back to Canada. I think that's where he was before he got picked up by Fnatic. Canada's so there might bad. Be some like...
Pretty sure IDDQD's like there too. Like, I think there's a lot of players having a lot of trouble getting into America
behind
right
the
now.
Wall.
Yeah,
I know.
Into the country. Trump's presidency is actually killing esports.
Yeah.
Damn.
The wall is real, guys. Definitely. No, I think you guys bringing up a lot of these things is just... You know, I think maybe making a lot of folks listening realize just there's a lot of logistical things that need to get done, you know, for, you know, obviously Overwatch League, Overwatch Contenders, even just in the short term right now. And it's hard to do that. Sometimes you got to make tough decisions, break up teams, you know, and have to let some players go that you didn't want to. But that's the business, right? I mean, you kind of have to do that right now. And unfortunately, we may be losing some of our favorite teams because of that. All right, let's see. That's going to be it for the, I guess, team news, but I want to give a shout out to all the folks that do listen to the overview on iTunes as well as Google Podcasts and SoundCloud. You can listen to us on the way to work, you know, audio podcast-wise. And I want to just mention that you can help out the show and help out folks finding the overview by leaving a, you know, 5-star review if you're on iTunes or anything like that. And then folks can find it easier just with SEO you know, helps out a lot. But let's talk about events. There's a lot of events to talk about, starting with the Overwatch Monthly Melee, which concluded on Thursday after, you know, it's just some technical issues over the weekend. And we had some interesting events happened. Selfless ended up winning it in a pretty Oh, no, sorry. No, no, sorry. Yikes ended up winning. I was thinking, sorry, Ravelgate. But Yikes ended up winning it, and we had some pretty epic matches, too, like towards the end. And then we actually had some crazy tilting that happened, too, which was quite surprising and pretty epic in its own right. But Yikes, you know, I think Yikes is obviously the breakout team of this entire tournament, and they, you know, they were playing great even before the just the finals in just the last couple rounds. What do you guys think of the Yikes right now? We're about to talk to them in Rivalgate too, but let's just say at least in the monthly melee, would you guys think of Yikes?
So I would just ask the other hosts, what do you guys think over under 1 week until Yikes gets signed by a sponsor?
Oh, it could depend on the volatility of some of the personalities on the team and how they possibly represent it. But these guys are really good, right? I mean, it was kind of interesting that with Dante had graduated, so he couldn't play, but Lynx has stood up really well for him. I think that really worked in that favor. That could have gone a heck of a lot worse. Ginger Pop is like impossible to kill on Mercy. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he stays alive so long. No one can kill that guy. And he hangs around and gets his fat reses, and he has a really good understanding of you know, how a tempo res should go as well, and you know, can measure those situations very well. Pizza is insanely good on Pharah. I think we've kind of seen that. I think like one of my favorite Pharahs in the US is Sure For. I think Pizza's quite consistent and definitely is approaching that. And obviously XQC is not someone you can really write out of it. He's the kind of guy that gets spurred on by any sort of, you know, any sort of negativity, right? That's what you want. And that's how you turn a team that hasn't been around for long into one that wins. It's a kind of this defiance and this desire to prove people wrong. And I got to hand it to Felix. You can say what you like about the guy, but he nailed it.
Mm-hmm. Flame, thoughts on
Yikes? What makes this Yikes team so good, Flame?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that?
So I'm not gonna like
what made them so good.
I don't want to BM them or anything. I don't want to like take away from their victory, but I do think that the map situation of that tournament really lended it to them because they had Oasis, I think, like every single match that they played, like literally every single match they were able to go to Oasis. And I don't think they lost on Oasis ever. Maybe they lost to LGE in groups, and I missed that because we didn't cast it, but for the most part, they just kept getting that map and they kept getting that win. And then they're also really good at like King's Row, and a lot of teams that are afraid of their dive kept taking them to King's Row. So there was like this weird cycle where we just kept seeing Yikes on King's Row and Oasis, and then they kept winning King's Row and Oasis.
Yeah, in fairness, quickly though, like Liquid is like an Oasis team, and we were all like, oh, I can't believe that right. Yikes are playing them on Oasis and they still beat them 3-1.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they played well. I think that they're better though at Pharmacy than maybe Liquid is. I think that they're probably the best team running it right now, and they have the best understanding. It's really hard, I think, to swap between like some, you see some teams running like Ana Zen on some maps, and then swapping to Pharmacy on like control points. But it's really hard to get in the mindset of like, oh, I need to die now, or I shouldn't, or I need to die over there if I'm gonna die. And they're probably the team that is the best at that, and as well as like keeping their Mercy alive to get those reses off. But
yeah,
they're on a different level when it comes to the Pharmacy. I think that it kind of hurt them though coming into Rivalcade afterwards. Some of the other teams were able to outplay them a little bit.
Definitely adapt them, just even like you said, like different maps and whatnot. One thing that did happen that was obviously a big topic of conversation was when they were playing Selfless, DeFran went into tilt mode, which I wanted to ask you guys, have you guys ever seen a player to that extent at a competitive event go into that kind of a tilt? I mean, just tilt that badly where they're just like not even just going where the team's going and just doing their own thing, basically.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, right? Like, Selfless have a really cut and dry approach on King's Row attack. They always have done it the same way. It involves getting DeFran up behind them and forcing him to be dealt with, right? That's kind of the idea. The problem was is that usually it's DeFran and someone else. It's usually a 76 and a Tracer or like a 76 and a D.Va. And then DeFran went to such lengths to try and get behind them that he literally went through the building all the way up back somewhere in the middle of the streets phase, only just to try and get up, you know, behind them from a completely different angle, right? And there was just this head against the wall kind of stuff. They kept trying to do the same thing, and that's why they didn't capture the point in 5 minutes, because they were just completely unwilling to change anything. Like, we were just flabbergasted. We're like, this is a fundamental failure on a communicative, you know, and an emotional level. But it looked like Till. I understand that he had to put the team on his back and actually establish high ground position and get a pick from there. and it wasn't working. So I have to wonder how much of that was him tilting, how much of that was the team or the person calling the shots, whether it was Imong, whoever, saying, go keep trying to do this.
I guess on the topic of have I seen someone tilt that bad? I mean, sure. And I think that across other games, it's a little bit less obvious. I mean, in Dota, people call GG after 12 minutes and then they'll leave and the game will be over and the game will end there. And maybe it's a premature GG, but I don't know. I mean, you could argue that they had already lost. You could argue that they should have tried a little bit more. I mean, I think that players have definitely thrown themselves off the map before, not knowing that the round was still going. Like, I don't know that he knew that his Winston was going to touch the point or the Tracer or whatever. So, that happened too in another match. I don't remember. I think it was CLG versus someone on Lijiang, where a player called GG, but then people started touching the point, and then they kept fighting for a little bit. So it was I think it was just weird because we were expecting another fight, but I don't know if internally for him, he expected his team to wind up delaying the point. So it might've been I just popped Dragonblade and spawn and dove off the map. I thought we were done, as opposed to, I'm literally tilting, game's over, ha ha ha. I think that it was more or less that moment might've been a misjudgment. Yeah.
That's definitely a lot different. I mean, he did mention that he was pretty tilted, right? But it doesn't necessarily mean that it was to that point. It definitely could have been just a miscommunication type of thing. But let's go into Rivalcade. So, Yikes coming off that victory. Rivalcade was pretty much immediately after, given that it was over the weekend. And in the end, Yikes ended up, for lack of a better word, disappointing. They definitely did not have a good run, even just in the first round. So in the end, Selfless ended up taking over C9, 3-0. So you could say in a way, maybe the whole team just kind of bonded together very quickly after the OMM on Thursday and kind of, we're back to the Selfless that we were used to seeing. But Rivalcade, what did you guys think? Ben, did you see it? Did you actually watch much of Rivalcade?
I didn't get a chance to watch it in too great detail yet, so I defer to someone that actually watched all the matches.
Okay.
I mean, I saw a little bit of Group A, which is luckily the one we're discussing. I think seeing LDLC just sort of waltz into this tournament and not get out of the group, to be fair. Even seeing their presence there was quite interesting. But in terms of Yikes, the group stage was okay. I think Kangana actually looked really strong for the entire tournament in general. At least up towards the end there. I think that's another interesting team, especially with guys like Dogman, who I know was actually trying to sort of get into a casting role for a while. He wasn't really wanting to play competitively much. Then he went back to streaming, and now he's back in this team. So, I mean, you've got Pooks there as well, who, some of us haven't seen for a little while. I think it's interesting that they got that far, but sometimes this happens. I mean,
in NA, it seems to happen a lot.
We've seen this before in Overwatch. It's just the chemistry and the feel of the day is just not present. Or sometimes maybe you think that you should, you're harder on yourself than you should be because you already have a result behind you. There's a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, they had just came off their OMM win and they were thrown to a new tournament with probably more banter than I think I've seen in at least the past couple of months between them and Kangana. Kangana probably overplayed themselves in that match against Denial. I think Denial had a really rough game. Like Mitch said, I don't think their players were really looking in their prime. I don't think Zaw was his normal self. I didn't think Dante really turned up. XQC was having a rough day too. I think it just wasn't their day. They still made it out of groups, but that tournament was interesting because I think being able to see Renegades for the first time was pretty good. They won with a few unconventional strats. C9's debut was definitely worth looking into, I think. My only issue with Rivalcade is that they did so much. It was literally an entire season of Apex equivalent in
2 days or three.
In 2 days, yeah. So there were a lot of really, really good games that didn't get casted or streamed that probably might have been better than some of the primetime ones. So, I don't know what went on in some of those games, but, I mean, the XCLG team did really well. They got bumped out of groups, but they, brought C9 to a third map, and it came down to, Kaiser hitting one crazy shatter on Dorado. Renegades went with some Hanzo shenanigans. What else happened? I mean, Selfless just looked really strong.
The final was super close, to be fair.
It was close. C9 looked good. Really close. I actually think C9 looked pretty good. Haven't quite put it all together yet, but you can actually see a lot of potential there.
I mean, to be fair, like Hollywood was okay, it was a draw. The problem is that both teams had like a minute or maybe a little bit over. I think C9 had a minute 50 to take the first point. So both of them, I mean, when you both have so little in the time bank, you both have similarly little amounts, that's going to happen. But the fact is that like C9, obviously, it's been a bit of a developmental period for them and new players coming into the team. This is a sick result because you need to take it in hand with the fact that Selfless are Selfless. Li Jiangtao was interesting. It was good to see the Pharaoh Mercy come out from Cloud9. Chufor is nuts. I saw him direct hit and kill Defran across the map with one rocket while he was mid-blink on Tracer. It's these things that just don't happen, right? I thought it was ridiculous. I think like Nepal was also super close. It went to all five. So Selfless, it's a 3-0 on paper. It's kind of reminds me of some of the games we've been seeing in Korea right now because it was really neck and neck all the way through. And we saw so many different comps come out from C9. They look really quite flexible. We saw Kaiser play mostly Winston and Reinhardt, but then, you know, it was Zephyr, flexing through quite a few different options. Shawfor doing that as well. I just found it a really good portfolio, actually, for the C9 we should expect after these changes.
Yep. Okay. Well, what's the next tournament for? Well, the next tournament's going to be happening soon, right? For all these teams?
Takeover, man.
Well, these teams are at Takeover, though.
I mean, no, but specifically C9.
Yeah, C9 will be at Takeover. I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's a big proving ground for them.
Yeah, so this weekend, man, it's going to be...
I don't know what the NA teams are waiting for right now. I think it's just contenders, and then maybe some of them are... I'm assuming there'll be another Rivalcade next month.
Okay, yeah, so at least a month. I mean, well, at least we have something next month, probably with the Rumble here. Let's talk about Apex. So we didn't talk about the Rogue match. Actually, the Rogue match happened on Friday, right? So Rogue fighting to stay in the tournament ended up having to have to beat Lunatic High and have to beat Lunatic High with a pretty good score, too. And so it was not likely going to happen. But in the end, they ended up getting beat 3-0. And last time we talked about, you know, when they played Panthera, we were talking about just Rogue not being ready to win, you know, when Pure was on, and there were moments where it looked like they should have won that series. I kind of feel like this one with Lunatic High, it didn't look the same. I felt like Lunatic High just outplayed them in a lot of ways. So wanted to see if you had the same feel for that or not when you were watching it. Ben?
Yeah, I mean, Rogue has been playing a very, very consistent style for a long time now, and casters were saying it, the pundits have been saying it. It's starting to feel like they don't have the flexibility that they kind of need to have to adapt in real time as the situations unfold. I mean, Lunatic High, they had a game plan going in, and it was to counter their D.Va pick. I think there was an interview, I can't remember who it was with on Lunatic High, but they talked about the fact that if Nika was going to go D.Va, they were going to try and take down that D.Va as early as possible. And you know, it just forced Nico into awkward situations. And someone on the Lunatic High roster was saying specifically they felt like Nico hasn't been playing up to where they hoped he'd be able to. So this Rogue roster, you've still got absolute monsters on it. You've still got Soon, who's one of the best tracers in the world. You've got this extremely well-rounded roster, but it doesn't seem like they've got the flexibility that they need to adapt to Korea. I mean, when you watch Lunatic High playing, they're playing everything. They're playing triple support. They're playing one support. You know, they pulled out both of those in a single best of five. It was in three maps. They played both triple support and solo support in different situations. And then you just look, and Rogue is playing the same thing over and over and over again. I mean, I think that's really like the core of the difference between these two teams and just their approach to the game. Lunatic High has utter flexibility, switching the comps up, picking all kinds of crazy picks. I think we saw Ryu Jaehong flexing onto Widow, if I remember correctly. You had all kinds of interesting things happening at where don't see that from Rogue.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's that easy. I really don't. I posted about this last night because I think like a lot of the criticism that's being leveled at Rogue, a lot of it is reasonable, or at least the origins of it are reasonable. A lot of people say they're quite predictable in terms of their role usage, which is sometimes a Yeah, in terms of the support alt uses anyway, I think because whenever Rogue feel their DPS players are threatened, they'll usually just bang that out. But I sort of said that, you know, Rogue, their team comps and they play this dive, but they play it in such a way where people just ult. It's just a frag. They want a frag. And like it might seem like an overly simplistic view of the game, but because they're not overly combo-centric, there still needs to be a fundamental framework of their strategy. And that's their biggest weakness is when I spoke to AKM at length about it because I was just curious about life and career, which, by the way, has been a little bit tough for some of the guys. I know like some of the Rogue guys are pretty fussy eaters and the lifestyle in Korea hasn't exactly agreed with them to a great degree. But they said it's not individuals that choke. It's that our communication and our teamwork completely falls apart. It's so funny because they're French, right? But I've heard this from so many French players and French teams that says our communication sucks. We'd actually rather speak in English a lot of the time because it means it's far more streamlined and not full of just garbage unnecessary stuff. But basically, Rogue, it's always in scrims that teams do really well, right? But Rogue did say, like, we feel really confident. We feel so confident when we go into these games because our scrim performances are good. And I think this is a reason why we're not actually seeing them change their comp up too much because they are still convinced that it works. Maybe they take too much stock in scrims. Maybe people are sandbagging against them. Maybe they're delusional. But they said, we definitely think we can go into this. They were also saying that Lunatic High were not looking so good in scrims as well. So they take a lot of stock from that. And then they're very frustrated. And they said, AKM was sort of like, we kind of choked again, you know, when we went through. Yeah. But it was actually a close series, especially in Nepal. They should have won Nepal.
The first game.
They tried to dive on a Winston, 6v1 right at the end, and they got back-capped twice in that round by Esker, who had a really good tournament on Tracer, a series on Tracer. So wasn't their day, that's for sure.
Blaine?
Lunatic High just outplayed them. I mean, at the end of the day, you can talk about their ult usage on the rest of their heroes, but I think between Unko and Wins ulting at the same time repeatedly throughout the series. Lunatic High just abused them. Like, they came out with a single support Lucio offense on Hollywood and like got through second point pretty handily just by, there was like that play where they baited out a tech visor and a sound barrier and then just all hid in the saloon and went on the roof and stuff. And that's like at the point where you're like, okay, this team actually just played them. And I mean, there's like a case to be made for if you're not going to use both support ults, or if you're using both support ults at the same time, do you really need both supports? So like that was kind of how it wound up feeling for that tournament, or at least for that series, because they would just abuse the fact that you could force out sound barrier and trans at the same time a lot, and then just come in with whatever you had that they didn't. It looked very systematic, and like the back capping from Eska was definitely noticeable on Nepal. But maybe they knew that. Like, maybe they knew that Rogue was a team that just doesn't acknowledge the point sometimes.
KM was standing on top of him. Yeah, he was on top of the actual pagoda or whatever.
Exactly. No, for sure. Exactly. So, like, Eska shouldn't be able to get away with that. But the fact that he does just speaks to, like,
I knew.
You could say that they choked or they just didn't perform well. But either way, I mean, it just looked like Lunatic High was playing with their food for a majority of that match.
I mean, when you win the first fight on Nepal, and then you can't stall it out, and you can't get like that early 60% from winning the first fight because you stall incorrectly and let them take the point back. It's super frustrating to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Lunatic High looking really, really good right now. How do you think they're ranking right now in terms of the teams that you've seen in Apex? Are they looking to maybe be poised for a repeat, or what do you think they rank right now?
I mean, people going into this season were saying Lunatic High may not be the favorite anymore, but I don't know. I mean, it's really, really hard to argue against this team.
They have days, man. They have days where they look really, really good, and they always have Jaehong and making crazy plays that literally win battles for them and with sleeps, and they have, obviously, Miro always Widowmaker. Playing solid. What was that?
Just play Widowmaker on Hollywood as well. Well,
yeah, that would add to.
I actually think, though, from what we've seen from Envy, I definitely still think they're in with a shot up against a team like Lunatic High. I mean, they arguably have a slightly softer group, right? You've got BK Stars and Rhino's Wings in there, but Envious are just they weren't even supposed to be the team that was.
Let's talk about Envious, exactly,
because they played Rogue in like a Ravacade. Yeah, a rumble. I think when Rogue first came to NA and they lost in the grand final, it was 3-2, and they were using Louis at the time, and everyone was like, "Yeah, Envy looking weaker. The move Tarry Hook off DPS, is this a bad decision?" Now they're just dumpstering people.
They look good.
There's like three teams, I think, that are probably on par or capable of beating Lunatic. I think it's Kongdu Panthera, Envy right now, and then what's the name of that team? X6.
Oh, X6, really?
X6 is like my runaway for this season. An underdog, randomly going to make a deep run kind of team. They're looking like their DPS players are looking really good, but I'm not really sure that Lunatic High is going to beat, or like how capable they are of beating Kongdu Panthera even right now. I mean, that match was weird, their meeting of each other in the first week, but
yep.
There's definitely, like, I don't think it's like, oh, Lunatic High is definitely the number one. I mean, AFB even looks pretty good right now too. So the problem is that a lot of them aren't playing each other, obviously, because it's groups. But I think once we get towards playoffs, it'll be a lot different and a lot more hype than probably even last season.
Yeah, well, let's
start. I just a question for the guys. Do you think that Rogue could have gotten out of groups if they were in a different group? Because they were in the toughest group. I mean, everyone agrees with that. But could they still, like, they didn't look that great. I mean, do you think they could have made it out of
different? I mean, I think Envy would have beaten them if they went to D even. Like, I don't think that I think they could have gone out of other groups, maybe, but they didn't. I don't know. I have a hard time like getting behind them after how systematically Lunatic Eye played against them. Like, they just made it look like they were, like, they knew exactly what was going to happen and they just abused it. So it's like weird, I guess, as a question, because I think that they definitely maybe could have made it out of D with Envy or something, or maybe made it out of C with, maybe it's AFB, I forget, but they might be better than X6. So maybe they could have beaten Runaway and X6 in that group, but
AFB would still wreck them. And
AFB would probably wreck them.
Would be garbage this season, because I was like, oh, they built another team around Arhan again. This is not going to go well. And yet they've actually been playing really, really well.
Yeah, I mean,
only two games so far, but they've been really dominant, especially first one over Runaway. That was like one of the opening games. We're like, yeah, all this hype from Runaway coming back in, and then Kaiser sat in the crowd with a bloody postman's hat on, like looking very sullen, and they just get completely trashed by AFB. I'm thinking,
he's trying to get his North American visa to join C9.
I know, right? A lot of stuff going behind the scenes there. But why don't we dig a little bit more into Envious, though? Like, I mean, we've talked to them, obviously. They're looking super good. One of the top teams for sure. But let's get into the details. I know you guys didn't get a chance to watch the series today, and I mean, spoilers for folks that haven't watched the VODs, they ended up winning 3-0, and they looked really, really good doing it. One thing that's, I think, becoming very, very obvious, they're flexing like crazy right now, you know, and that's one thing that is completely the opposite of Rogue. We saw Taimu, I think I saw Taimu play 7 characters today. And when I was watching the VOD, something crazy. Yeah, he played Sombra, Reapers,
Match today was a wash. I don't think I mean, Envy was obviously going to make it out, but I don't know that BK Stars had any out of the group.
Oh, so it was just like, I mean, there was no meaning to the match.
I mean, like Envy wanted to win cleanly because they want to get first seed.
Yeah.
But as far as BK Stars goes, they didn't have anything to play for as I know.
Oh, okay.
They were already, well, they'd beaten RG Wing, so I think they were 1-1 going into that game. So
yeah, they still had a chance.
Yeah, I think they had a chance, but after they lost the first game, I think they may have been out after that. But regardless, it doesn't really change the fact that Envious looked pretty good, and we saw Taimu and Sombra. Like, I haven't seen Taimu on Sombra, and getting watching him play some Widow, just breaking it out on certain maps, and I mean, we saw an array of things, and that all is because of, you know, Effect being able to take a lot of pressure off all, like every single one of them. Even the support players are, I think, just you're getting a chance to see like them being able to flourish more too, I'm a total brain fart. The D.Va player.
Mickey,
yeah. Even Mickey was able to play Torbjorn, you know, on some of these maps too. And I mean, he's starting to play it like a lot, you know, maybe like half the time. So, I feel like even pressure off of Mickey too is you're just seeing it all around, just the improvement that Effect is having on the entire team. And it's crazy awesome.
Said it before, man.
Yeah.
Really good Tracer absolutely is essential in the current meta. Like, every team has to have a top-tier Tracer, otherwise you're not a top-tier team. I think it's that simple.
It's exactly why Selfless were able to spawn camp people so damn hard, because they were one of the first teams to realize how important. Seriously, one of the first teams to realize how important having that good tracer is and using it in every comp and actually getting over the fact that there's vulnerabilities there. If your tracer player is good enough, then you can literally embarrass your opponents. People cottoned on eventually, but it's a super big part of the meta, especially now. You know, with players using pulse bomb, especially a pulse bombing divas just to set up for attack visors and stuff like that. Like, that's one thing Luntikai are very good at doing. They went straight for Nico, not just because they thought he was a weaker player, but because they knew that Esker could, or whoever's playing 76 at the time, could just get free ult off.
Like, what do you see as a potential counter meta to like Tracer? I mean, we were seeing some of, you know, I felt like the Torb turret was helping to at least zone Tracer out a little bit, you know, on the Hollywood maps. But do you see any kind of big composition that's going to change that? Because Tracer's such a huge part right now.
I think
Who? Like what? I mean, you could go McCree. Obviously, everyone thinks McCree when they think Tracer counter, but McCree's also the most diveable DPS in the goddamn game.
Not a great solution.
It's not a great solution. You might be right. Who knows? Maybe Torb is the best counter currently.
Just to zone him out a little bit.
Teams like Selfless get a lot of mileage against it because Emong is an insanely good Roadhog. That's like one of the biggest things in their pocket. Like, he's that kind of guy that just pops off, you know, pretty comfortably and gets, you know, three kills in a fight. But that's not foolproof. I also think teams that have Winston players that, you know, if they haven't already dived, if they're cognizant of the fact that they need to peel for their supports, like a Winston can be quite annoying for a Tracer, especially if he's a first responder to peel for the backline. But there's nothing set in stone. And that's the whole point of Tracer design, actually, the fact that you can bloody well teleport out the fight.
Well, I mean, you're already seeing that, though. You're seeing, like, Winstons and Divas being bodyguards in a lot of situations, and still... Tracers are still
good. Zenyatta wrecks them as well. To be fair, we see that quite a lot lately. It's a big time for Zenyatta.
Well, there's also the pharmacy aspects, but that's also like the one direct rocket will just delete a Tracer. Mm-hmm. That's probably like the most reliable counter right now. I mean, there's obviously heroes that can erase a Tracer, but they're not so good against Winston D.Va.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm hoping players will start trying other things. I mean, Hanzo's obviously out of the question, I think, just because of the way D.Va and Winston work, but.
Right.
I'm waiting for the May. I'm waiting for the rando right click.
Oh, yeah, you keep talking about May, deleters. Right? May's...
The hero's so good, but nobody's really abusing it yet, I think. There's a few heroes, I think, that are still, like waiting to be abused.
Yeah.
And that's one of them, in my opinion.
What do you think about these triple support and single support type of comps?
I think triple support is really risky. I understand the premise of it, but it's, like, it's one of those, like, kind of all-in strats. It's kind of how Dive used to work against 2-2-2, where you would come in with Dive... I think before, I don't even know what the difference maker was. I think Ana was still really, really strong, so players were less able to kill Annas. But like, if you lose a fight with Dive, or back then if you lost a fight with Dive, you kind of just never won a fight after that.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the same with the triple support. It's like, you either, if you can survive the first engage and get your support ults up and then like start cycling them, it's really good. But at the same time, if they just kind of run you over in the first fight and snowball you out, it's like really, really hard to get a footing.
Right.
I think that is the point, cycling through those support ultimates. That's actually the most important part. And it's quite a defining factor, especially on King of the Hill maps. Some teams just straight up, the best teams actually don't use their sound barrier when they see one coming out and still navigate around it or disengage and then use it. For example, it's hate that Rogue has been losing out lately. So you have a lot more of a margin of error, I think, as well, when you do play triple support, if you can trust that your DPSs and tanks are actually getting the job done. But Zenyatta gives so much damage potential as well that, you know, you can supplement a lack of a DPS or maybe a damage-doing tank with
it. Lucio frags too now. It's a wonderful world.
Seriously.
I love it. Yeah, I think with the solo support, what we saw Luntikai do against Rogue is, it's Rogue. You know they're going to play dive defense, right? So... if there's going to be a Winston barrier and probably a D.Va trying to absorb Ana shots anyway, why do you need an Ana? You probably don't even want an Ana in that situation. So I think the Luntikai going flexing Ryu Jaehong into Widow in that situation and going with just a solo Lucio to heal the whole team makes perfect sense because they're playing dive defense. If you can dive into them with that much more DPS, you're not going to hit the Ana heals anyway in that first couple seconds of the engagement. So I think that makes a lot of sense when you're facing particularly against another dive comp.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, why don't we wrap up Apex and talk about TakeOver 2, which is going to be happening this weekend. And obviously Uber here is going to be casting the event and joining all just the festivities that are over at Take's place. It's always a lot of fun over there. But yeah, why don't we give a quick rundown of it? You want to walk us through it, Uber?
Sure. I mean, like, I think outside of Pip, which obviously unfortunately didn't have a LAN final, this is one of the first LANs in quite some time in Europe, which is a pretty big deal because, I mean, I just saw it on Reddit every day on people telling me how scared they are for the future of Overwatch, which, by the way, like, calm down. First of all, like, yeah, there's no LANs, but you just need to trust. But some people can't. That's fine. If they've got issues, that's their problem. But this is pretty big. It's 50K in prize pool, which is pretty solid. If you think, like, the Atlantic Showdown, I think last year was 100K, and that was, like, big, big, big. This one is definitely got more of that fun family vibe as well. But we got some big teams coming across for this as well. I mean, Brogue coming back from Korea, of course, mm-hmm. they kind of have to ultimately. C9 is coming over from the States, you know, and we've got some teams we haven't seen in ages, like Misfits, who haven't played since the European Pit tournament, and IP, I think, much the same. You know, we saw United start to really show things off in the Pit themselves. Movie Star Riders, who won the whole thing. This is a sick time if you're a European Overwatch fan to actually see not only how NA and EU teams are interacting with each other on to a degree, but also what's been cooking up now when people have been spending their time, you know, doomsaying about Overwatch esports in Europe. So it's sick. And even I think X-Cyclone are going to be there as well, who, mm-hmm. to be fair, are a team that oppressed me a fair bit. I think Hammers came second in both qualifiers and got invited anyway, which is interesting because I think they get like virtually a higher seeding than the teams that beat them because I don't know. I think they had to replace a team, right? But right. Yeah, it should be good.
I think this tournament is so interesting, mm-hmm. and quite difficult to call. You've got Rogue, who, in my opinion, are probably the favorites going into this simply because of how well that they had been playing in their time in NA prior to their stint in Korea here. They've been in Korea. They've been scrimming against the top teams. But you could also argue that they have negative momentum just from how thoroughly they got thwomped, completely destroyed, let's be honest, in Apex. Like, this team did not live up to their reputation in Korea. So in a way, I feel like they're favorites, but they're also... they also have the most to lose here because the momentum is no longer behind them. If they don't have a strong performance here, it's showing that they're not just unable to compete against the top Korean teams, but also potentially against Europe and America. Cloud9 recently added Kaiser. Who knows how they're playing now? I mean, they look stronger this last week. Can they carry in that momentum? Misfits, we haven't seen them for a while. They've made a roster change as well. They could be doing quite well. Movie Star Riders, most recently, have turned heads, winning entire tournaments. They are a contender to win this one. United playing better than ever as well. NIP, the Finnish squad, we don't know where they're at. So honestly, I think there are just so many storylines going into this. And they're probably, in my mind, four or even five of these teams could win this. It's really hard to tell. I mean, who do you think is the favorite going into this, Flynn?
On paper, I don't know. I would say United or maybe Movie Stars.
Really?
I had wow. hope for Cyclone or X-Cyclone, but they just got poached. So they're going to have a rough tournament.
They're using, obviously, like, Lukey's the coach of that team. He's playing main tank because Malzasa is going to Lazy Kittens. And also they had a player leave a little bit before that as well. Boombox, of course, he's now playing for United. So they've had to scramble to fill the gaps. I think they're using Krytox, who, if you know, is Lelouch from Singularity Ninjas, a Danish team. So, I mean, they've really had to throw their team together for this, to be honest. It's a bit of a shame because guys like Davin and Pox are really good DPS players. Davin's a sick Tracer, but I think Pox has to move to flex support now to cover for Krytox being on the team as a DPS player. So it's not ideal by any stretch for them.
Yeah, I think that I know EU United wants to, like, I guess for a lack of a better phrase, shut up Rogue. So
really, okay.
I think that's a big, there's going to be a lot of good rivalries in this tournament just between them. I don't know. I don't really personally see C9 performing too well just based off Rivalcade, but the extra week might be good enough for them or whatever VODs they have now of themselves to go over and like figure out what went wrong. But I don't know. I agree with the negative momentum comment on Rogue.
Any thoughts on Misfits? A little quiet recently.
I mean, they were losing online tournaments.
Right.
And I haven't seen a lot of them. They went to Apex, obviously, and then they didn't have the greatest time at Apex when they went. And then they went home, and then they lost tournaments like Movie Star Riders.
They lost 2-0 to Dignitas.
Dignitas, yeah. So, like, they're not having a good time right now. So I don't have massive expectations, but at the same time, I mean, like, it's a LAN. Some teams just play a lot better at LAN. Some teams play worse. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be good regardless.
Tvik's a big LAN player in general. I think he steps up. Zave was removed from the team, which kind of surprised him as well. He was a difference in style. He's the kind of guy that really likes to be quite aggressive when he plays Lucio. And the problem was that Zebesai was calling, but relied quite a lot on Zave's calling as well. I think so. Having Mineral on the team, who's a bit more vocal, was part of their plan. Tvik assures me now that the consistency and the communication is a lot better. But that's a team that kind of had to rebuild, I think, after the changes they made. After Pit was a pretty good example. But it's been a month and a half since
we. I think they're going to surprise people. Yeah, I feel like they've been quiet. They've probably been practicing. I mean, they've always been practicing a ton. And you know, sometimes when you just aren't playing events and you get a chance to, you know, really work some kinks out and without people watching, then, you know, you're able to kind of make some splashes at the next event you're doing. So I don't know. I've got this feeling that they're going to come out and actually do decently, but I am most intrigued by C9. I really want to see how they do, because I think they're only going to get better and better, especially with Kaiser playing more and more with them. All right. So Takeover 2. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Who's all casting, Uber? It's you.
Me and Jason.
Jason, of course.
Which I haven't cast with him for like ages. I actually think the last time we cast together was Trino last year for Apex.
Oh, so has it been that long? Really?
Literally, we like worked together, right? Like, we just haven't got to cast together. It was just the way it goes, right? I mean, I've been happy to, you know, get opportunities to cast with some other people, but Sideshow is going to be there as well, who I have a lot of regard for. I think he's probably one of the best prepped casters, because also that overlaps with him being a journalist and he's very much involved. We never really got to work together in the UK at that particular event. And also Sideshow, who, you know, when I saw him casting that 1v1 tournament with Slasher for like 8 hours a day, I just knew it had to be. I just knew he did a good job. So I have a lot of faith in those two. I think they both got a bit of experience. I think Bren also really put in hard yards to actually get somewhere. So I'm glad Take reached out to those guys to join us. So it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. You can always guarantee that Take's events are going to be fun. It's a constant, definitely in esports. Okay, well, why don't we go into some Q&A? I've got a couple email questions that figure we'd run them by you guys. If you got any questions too, go ahead and message them in Twitch chat, and we'll see if anything pops up that's kind of interesting. Okay, so we've got one from Mike Brennan, and he asks about a 1v1 a LIM type of format. He says, first off, really loving the 1v1. I made 1v1 fresh again over with the overtime point capture. The idea I had originated from the old Street Fighter group battles. Basically, you pick a number of characters. So let's just say you pick 6 of them. And then you fight with those characters until you defeat all the opponent characters. You fight with them in order and you selected them. And once you've selected them, you can't change them. So it's got this kind of FPS, you know, just this... you know, just fighting game kind of feel, right? So you have like a series of heroes going back and forth. So once Genji dies, immediately Soldier comes on. Yeah, what do you kind of think? What do you guys think of that kind of format for 1v1?
Competitors probably would not like it as much, because you're taking huge gambles and you can get stuck with things that you don't like. But from a viewer's perspective, people love the random factor. Why do you think games like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is so big on Twitch? that random factor just adds another level to it. Random/metagame/ part of the reason why poker is something that people like watching on TV and on Twitch as well. So I think that aspect could be pretty interesting. But pre-choosing a full roster in a specific order before the games, I think, may not be the most fun to play. I'll say that.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think the problem is that it doesn't give you much of an opportunity to adapt throughout the course of a match, right? I think that's actually where some of the best talent in Overwatch is actually demonstrated, when like you can actually you know, perceive your environment and actually make a change to address problems that exist. And that might just not be possible in that kind of format. I mean, I think like even in the early days of Hearthstone, they kind of had that idea where like you'd have like, you know, you'd have X amount of decks and you'd use them whenever and maybe like once you
want.
So I'm not really a big Hearthstone follower, sorry, but yeah. I know that they use something similar like that, which is kind of cool. But I mean, let's not kid ourselves here. That game is a game that has a built-in element of randomness because it does make it enjoyable. And I have objections about too much randomness when it comes to something actually being on the line. So
yeah. Okay. Flame, what do you think?
I mean, it sounds like Quake Champions Duel, and I thought Quake Champions Duel was like one of the worst game modes I've ever played. So I'm not a fan. I think if I was going to fix 1v1 or change it, I would turn it into like more of a first to 20 kills with like random respawns, similar to like TF2 MGE mod.
Right.
Because it's more action packed, it's more consistent. You don't have to like, it's not like next round and it brings you to like that really long drawn out hero screen that like shows your intro video. I think that like takes up way too much time in some weird way.
Yeah, that's.
But I do think it'd be cool if you could pick the hero beforehand, but I still think I'd rather have it be like 5-stock or something weird before you swapped heroes or after like you treat each 5 stocks as a round, then maybe you go to the next hero or something.
Right.
But I wouldn't want it like Quake Duel.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And but again, like my biggest thing is that it just needs to be a more fluid type of format. Like just have longer durations for the rounds. And whether, you know, you do that with this type of thing or you do it with you know, just first to whatever kills and have respawns and things like that. Just something needs to change with it.
So okay. How time to kill works in Overwatch.
Yeah.
That's why.
Right. We didn't mention, I do like the capture point, you know, like the square capture point they've added now for the overtime. No more draws, right? So I think that's definitely
really Drayson, nice. We're looking at you, bro.
That's right. All right. So Aaron Thompson has a question about banned characters. So we've had this question on the show before, and I want to see if your thoughts have changed at all. What do you guys think of, you know, ban type events? You know, things we've seen, obviously, with other esports. In the past, we've discussed it, and, you know, Overwatch isn't really that type of game, right? Where you have, like, a six, you know, we choose the 6 heroes, and we're locked into them. So that, you know, there's, you know, bans prior to the matches actually make sense. You know, you can actually have that as a strategic element to it. You can still have bans. It's just the game doesn't enforce it at all. So it's something that they would have to add to the game. But what, generally speaking, do you like the concept of bans in Overwatch?
It's fine. Sorry, you go, man.
I mean, just the Lunatic High game alone, I think, is proof that hero swapping can be fun and dynamic and exciting. I agree with the original mentality and the original philosophy. I'll say that.
Okay. I think, look, you like when the game first came out, it was like debatable or arguable. Like, is banning ultimately at one point going to be a good thing? But the reality is that Blizzard are going to keep building their game around the philosophy of probably no drafts and no bans. Okay, they like the fact that you could switch heroes. Now, it was an arm wrestle to get them to go away from no hero limit in the first place. I mean, there was a big discussion that was going on because that was another thing that differed from their core philosophy. And obviously we eventually realized that didn't work and it wasn't really fun or didn't make a lot of sense. So, you know, I think, but they're going to keep building this game with that in mind. So the further along we go, they're probably, with the more heroes in the game, okay. You know, if you can still have, you know, if you can have like 60 comps instead of like the 4 or 5 that exist right now, then that might reward a team for having more depth or be able to respond to that. But just on a simple level, with the amount of heroes we have right now, I don't like it.
I'll maybe piggyback another question on top of that, which is there any other strategic aspects of Overwatch esports that could be added that's not just picking maps? You know, like map bans and things like that. Is there anything that we could do to add that kind of element?
Yeah, I mean, there's like a lot of things you can do. I don't know. For me, like I didn't come from, but I watched a lot of Dota, played a lot of TF2. I think that there's something to be said for like the amount of dead time at the beginning of a broadcast, and even the after a broadcast, kind of, because the game lacks a lot of strategy, at least initially, when it comes to spawning. I think spawning right now, like the initial spawns on a map are very, I don't want to say random, but there's no concept of countering or real strategic planning other than defense has their plan and offense has their plan. They just kind of clash. I think that there's like a missing piece there that really does restrict hero usage because of the fact there's no bans. I'm not saying that we should ban, but I think that like some form of picking at the beginning would add a lot to the game. Maybe you could pick like 9 heroes that you could pick from throughout the match or something, or 10, and you don't have to call it banning, but they pick an order so that like, cause like how many times do people realistically swap? There's maybe like 1 or 2, maybe 3 swaps per map per player.
So, a pool limit.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay. So these 10 heroes are allowed in this pool. And I think if you actually added something like that, you would have a lot more heroes getting picked because you could start counter picking more freely and more like, what's the word? Safely, because you would know what the enemy team had already picked.
Yeah, it'd be like a draft.
If you knew the enemy team had like 4 tanks in their lineup, you could pick Bastion because they maybe wouldn't have a Bastion counter, and then like stuff like that would be a lot more prevalent. So I think that the fact that there are no bans and there is no picking does lend itself to the strategies that we see right now, which is a lot more mobility based heroes and like focusing a lot on high ground. And that's why we see a lot of Winston, Tracer, Genji, D.Va, just heroes that are really good at getting around the map, as opposed to maybe more static defenses that might be, or more static offenses that are better if you take away some of the heroes or limit some of the picking.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like the argument goes both ways, I think, in terms of what you see and what you like get out of the restrictions, quote unquote.
Right.
I do.
Uber, you can say something?
Only because it's kind of like, if you think of the idea of like a pool or something like that, like you kind of actually deepen the economy concept in Overwatch, which now kind of extends to how many ults do they have? Is it more than the other team? Are they going to ult this fight or not? So,
right.
You know, something else in there, like something that people need to manage outside of their awareness and aim and ults would be pretty cool.
Yeah. I think it's going to become even more clear once more and more heroes come out. You know, when the pool's a lot bigger and, you know, having a subset of the pool just starts becoming, oh yeah, okay, that makes a lot bigger difference. Yeah.
So I have this conversation a lot whenever there's a new hero that comes out. Cause I like when the game was, I want to say new, I mean, obviously it's new, but last year when we were playing the game, there were new heroes, right? Like Anna came out, and what else was there that was like really new? I think there was a time where we didn't have Genji. We didn't have
D.Va
and like maybe even Mei. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, how does this impact it? How does this impact it? And then like now it's kind of like, is this hero better than Winston? Is this hero better than Tracer? Is this hero better than Anna? And it kind of does, like, it sounds oversimplified, but I think that conversation is legitimate. And like back then it was like, is this hero better than Rodog? You know, so my issue sometimes with Overwatch heroes is that there's only 6 slots. It's like, who are you going to replace to put in this maybe new niche hero? And I think that like putting a little bit more restrictions on the pool of matches and stuff like definitely opens up some more unique picks or strategies.
Okay. All right. Well, that's it for the questions. We might have time for one last question. If you guys see anything good in the chat here, anybody? Let's see if there's anything.
Are we going to see a trend of NA teams picking up Koreans?
Oh.
And is that the answer to leveling the playing field of NA in Korea? I don't think so.
What, you don't think NA teams are going to start picking up Korean players more?
I mean, they can, but I don't think it's like solving many problems. I think like Envy is one of the few teams that's made it work like super successfully. I don't think new C9 with 3 Koreans or 2 Koreans is like super much better than old C9, in my opinion anyway.
Yeah, but maybe not like with this limited sample size. I feel like it is. It's like the beginning of it. We are going to see more and more, I think, NA teams or EU teams looking into Korea. It's just a matter of the logistics. Like, can they move there? You know, like figuring out all that stuff. If that can be figured out, then why not?
Like, region locking was a whole thing in StarCraft that was like hotly discussed for ages. But to the best of our knowledge, the Overwatch League in North America is going to sort of, you know, come to fruition, at least in some degree, before in other regions, before Korea, before Europe. So you've got a pool of players that are in Korea, not necessarily playing an Overwatch League, you know, comparative, you know, competition. And maybe they want the money or the fame or you know, or whatever. So I think we'll see more Koreans come over in the short term, at least.
I mean, we'll
see more. I mean, there's a precedent for this in League of Legends where the Koreans are much more dominant than they are in Overwatch. And as someone says in chat, those teams haven't really seen a ton of success. The still the most successful North American and European teams typically are the ones that are not necessarily the ones that have the top level Korean talent. So will it happen? I'm sure it'll continue to happen. Will it be the difference maker? Yet to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can make a case for picking them up. I just don't think it's like gonna, shrink the gap between the regions. Like, I don't really, the Korean players are obviously really good, but I think that Korea is just ahead from like an infrastructure and tournament standpoint right now that like gives them a little bit of an advantage in just like the fact that they're able to play LANs every week and like a lot of their esports economy and esports hub is one city where everyone kind of just congregates. I think that that helps a lot too. So I'm not sold so much on the fact that like, oh, we can just bring in some Korean players and it's going to make our NA team better. I think like communication has a lot of restrictions in that regard right now. And
yeah, it could
be definitely see some teams having trouble talking amongst their teammates just because of it, like English.
Yeah. It's a supply issue.
Like one's Korean, one's English, and there's all these like, you know, proxy like, ways of like trying to convey a point. So that must be super tough.
Yeah, I can imagine that. We do have a supply issue though. Like, you know, we were talking about earlier, NA and tanks, right? Super hard to find great tanks in NA. So we have to go somewhere to find them if not, just growing them in NA themselves. So we'll see what ends up happening there. But yeah, I think that's going to be it, guys. You know, we'll try to get some more questions. If you do have questions for next week, go ahead and email those to theoverview@championview.tv. And the highest priority always goes to the emails. So we'll read those out. And if you want to email them, then that's going to be the best way. But let's wrap up, guys. Let's do some shout outs. Fantastic show. Ubers, we don't have you on enough, I swear. But you're our one busy guy. So, you know, definitely I'm very grateful whenever you can stop by and hang out with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, today is 2 years since I left Australia to come to Germany to be a full-time caster. So
Big
shout out to everyone who helped me along the way, to you guys and everyone I've met as well. Like, I wouldn't have been able to have these opportunities if I didn't have people around me that were willing to give advice and help me develop. So you all know who you are. So thanks to those guys. That's all.
All right, Flame, shout out. Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter, Twitch, Discord. I don't know. I feel like I've had this conversation so many times.
Of course.
It's been a year. It's been a long year. Like, I think this is like the 1 year anniversary of me not playing professionally. So it's been,
that's true. It's been I didn't think about that. That's a long time.
I have an echo chamber now, Flame.
My dog.
I mean, you have an echo chamber in your Discord, bro.
Oh, my Discord.
That's my dog.
That's why I don't say that much. That's why I don't say that much in there anymore. You got to keep it all.
Yeah, yeah. Cut and pasting, screenshotting seems to be a very popular thing.
Yeah, don't type the wrong things in the wrong Discord chat.
Yeah.
Don't DM the wrong people.
That's right. Ben, how about you? Shout outs.
Since Uber didn't do it, I'll just give a big fat plug to TakeOver this weekend. It's the next biggest thing in Overwatch esports, so make sure to watch it. A lot of storylines going into that. It's going to be twitch.tv/taketv. And I think twitch.tv/taketv_OW or something like that. I'm not sure. One of those two. It's going to be good times. Also, one thing we totally didn't touch on at all in the show, was Siegel and Calvin and all of those guys. Streaming scrims all week long has been the best entertainment I could have ever asked for. I've watched every single hour of that, either live or on VOD. So that's been an absolute pleasure to watch. I hopefully they'll be doing more. I know, Flame, you've been coaching them a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's been really some of the best streaming content out there. I'm just going to be watching Take TV this weekend. Looking forward to it.
They're streaming right now, actually, but I'm about to go stream that too because
I just love the brainstorming you guys do. You know, like when you're
well, the thing is like stuff, you have ideas that. Or I have ideas, right? And like normally most teams are like, oh no, we're just gonna play the safe thing. But this team doesn't care about winning so much. So like,
yeah, it's fantastic. Everything about it is great.
If I say crazy stuff like, oh, just run a Maze Aria offense on Gibraltar, like it'll be fine. And then they do it, and it works. And then it's like, okay, it worked.
It's awesome.
Is it reliable? Maybe. Did you guys play it wrong? And like, it's a good learning experience. Like, they're all really good is the thing too. Like, I don't know, people, there's a lot of Siegel and Calvin haters when it comes to like professional play.
It's a legit team.
Yeah, Calvin's tracer is actually insane from like any standpoint, I think. And like Siegel's Farrah mechanics have been like ridiculously impressive.
Siegel Farrah.
If Calvin can carry Jason to top 500, he must be pretty sick.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I'll wrap up. Thank the obviously three of you guys for doing the show today. You guys are awesome. And then everybody for watching. I just want to give a shout out just to everybody that ended up watching Streamer Showdown on Thursday. It ended up being like a crazy awesome success. So thanks everybody for doing that. We'll be doing more Overwatch editions in the very near future. And just watching Jeff and just Jeff being more like regular Jeff on the show is like awesome, and Siegel and Musilk too. But you can find the VODs for this show on youtube.com/ChainManV. You can follow us on Twitter at ChainManV, at Fishsticks, at MattR0D, right? Yeah, R0D for Flame, and then
I'm trying to get it changed, but you gotta find good Twitter people, and it's really hard.
I would love to get the shouts out of my name, but that's the way it is.
Exactly.
One day it's doable.
You have to compete against a company now, Uber, man. It's gonna be harder.
But yeah, you don't have any chance. I'm just trying to get like at FLM or something.
At FLM would work. But then Flom would, you know, anyways.
At Flem.
Yeah, you can also find the show on iTunes again. So if you want to listen to it on the way to work, look for that on your iTunes devices or your iPad or iPhone. And that's going to be it for this week, guys. So for Uber, Flame, Fishsticks, and myself, ChainManV, we'll see you next week.